let's open with a word of prayer. Father, we still our hearts before you. We still our minds here before you for the next few minutes to try to open, try to get a vision for what we can do to impact the present and eternity future just a little. Just a little bit that we could do because of the time we spend here, so that there would be more people somehow praising your Son for the work that He did, and people that are celebrating His love for them because of the time we spend here. We just do pray that you would cause our love for you and for other people to grow in intensity and duration and consistency, and that would spill over into the lives of others. So help us to look at this material as we go through and see where it works and where it won't work and where it would apply in our lives, and give us your heart for the people around us and our families, our friends, our families, our loved ones and our associates. We ask this for the honor of your Son, that His kingdom, that His agenda of love would be furthered because of what we do here tonight. Amen. Okay, we started last week, and I want to take you, there's two comments I want to make. I will end up rebutting myself generally at every one of these. I'll come back with something else I should have said about the previous session. And one of the things I wanted to take you through was the agenda again. So if you look at the front, the topics, and about why we're doing it in this order, why it's looking like this. What we did last week was basically the theoretical stuff. We did introduction, goals, and methods. We talked about what we're trying to accomplish here. And this is the most theoretical of what we'll do. Most of the other material will have some theory that we have to deal with objections and problems. But trying to make sure that we are on target with our heart for what we're trying to do was important. The section we're going to read tonight, we're going to work through tonight, is called Living the Life. And living the life is being a Christian at the office. And we're not going to cover all of Christian ethics by definition, but we're going to only talk about specific problems that show up at the office, conflicts that we get that tend to compromise or have the opportunity to compromise our witness for the Lord. So we're going to talk about a couple of issues there, ethics and trinkets and things of this type. Section 3, which we may get ahead and be able to deal with, start into tonight, is proclamation, how we actually shift gears into proclaiming. The word preach is, we get the word kerygma from, which has to do with a proclamation, or evangelism is an announcement. And we're trying to actually have our lives be that announcement, and for that, for our lives to spill over into our words. And so here we're going to talk about, in proclamation, we're going to talk about actually how we try to shift. When somebody comes up and you says, gosh, that was a great thing. That was a kind gesture that you did to Mary. I was impressed by that. In proclamation, we try to learn how to spin that into something about the Lord, so that somehow the fact that it flowed out of our relationship with the Lord is predictable and part of our life. 4, we get into content. 4 and 5, we talk about actually what is the gospel. Again, this, our emphasis here upon is practical things, so we're not going to get into a tremendous amount of theology, but what we've got to find out here under content is exactly what, when we get that two-minute opportunity to pop that in the elevator and are on the way to the car before you split up to go to the separate cars, you know, how much precision do we have to have? We talked about last time about, you know, what kind of word choices, how religious, you know, are we going to end up sounding, you know, and here in content, we've got to be faithful to the gospel, to the content of the Word of God, and be able to put that on wheels for the people. 6 will be call to action. This will be how we try to move the people to do something with the information that we give them. Humans are not known for their quick response to new data. We tend to be stubborn. As people, we are whimsical in some cases. And call to action, we'll talk about ways of trying to nudge them along gently, without being a closer in a sales sense. You know, is there any reason why you shouldn't trust Christ today? Let's put them up on the board. Okay, let's go through each one and check them off. Have we answered all your objections? Then, right, let's close the deal. Right. Sign here. Here's the prayer. Read after me. And so call to action. We'll talk about how we move, try to encourage people and nudge them forward. 7 and 8 are problems. We'll talk about everything from the skeptic that comes up, the objections that show up there. We'll talk about the problem of friendly fire when another Christian tries to help and then they mess this up something royally for you. We'll talk about when you blow it, when you lose it, and compromise the Christian. How do you try to recover from that? So we'll talk about the cults. We'll talk about a number of things that make, in at least in our context, make it sort of difficult and that we have to think about. And 9 and 10 have to do with when they say yes. So when they say yes, we're trying at that point to know what to do. What do you do? Well, you say, that's great, trust the Lord, catch you around the grill. You know, we have the. Is that self-explanatory? What all we've got back there?
Yes.
Okay, just one of each. Just make one of each. Okay. And when they say yes, is our mild form of follow-up. When we'll talk about this when we get into the theology of the new birth. Most of us think in terms of new birth as is something that happened at a moment in time, and you're either over here or over there, that it's an instantaneous thing. And a lot of us, of course, have experiences of this way. But if you look at the biblical metaphors, of course, birth is not an instantaneous thing. There's a gestation period. There's crops that grow. And so we're always trying to move people forward in this process. And when they say yes, do we always assume that they mean yes? Do we always understand what they mean by yes and things of that type? And so we'll talk about what they do when they say yes and then what to do when they say no. When they say, I'm not interested, you know, thank you for your time, and please put me on your do not call list. If they give you that response, we'll talk about how to live with them in the office every day for the rest of your tenure there at the office, because it's not that clear. So that's, again, a sort of an overview of where we're trying to go. We're trying to let our experience of the Lord ourselves spill over through our words and our lives into the lives of others. Now, one of the questions that I wanted to put more detail on before we get into the homework assignments was about, I talked about one of the challenges you face at the office is being an associate with them and not putting them in targeting mode. I mean, we're going to have this little list of the 5 people in our office, you know, that we may or may not ever get the chance to visit with. But we mentioned the point about not, you know, putting them in target mode so that we distance from them in that process, as opposed to sitting down and having table fellowship with them. And the reason I need to comment this, because that's a common problem, because we distance in this process of making somebody a target. And I want to defuse that slightly by just simply pointing out that everybody is a target. In other words, everybody that you're supposed to come in contact with, including yourself, is on a spiritual growth and a spiritual journey and a pilgrimage. And so everybody that you come in contact with, you're supposed to try to move them further along a little bit. Christian, if it's a hostile non-Christian, you're supposed to love them further up to where they're at less hostile non-Christian, and eventually where they're an open, they move from a skeptic to a seeker, and then they move to a skeptic to an almost believer, not sure where I am, to a believer, to a disciple, to a growing, active disciple, and then to a mentor. And everybody in that, when I run across mentors, with people that have been in the faith twice as long as I, okay, and I've been walking almost 30 years. And when you see these, some of them live here, that have known the Lord 50, 60 years walking with Him. And I've learned enough that when you sense that presence, you sit down and shut up. You watch and you listen. So I remember the first time I heard that the guy named Luce, there's somebody here, an older, Charlie Luce, he made an introduction from 1 John about loving one another. It was a little 3-minute gig in introducing, he was talking about that this was important, was to love one another. And you know, I ready to check out, you know, and do the hand waving and all that stuff at that point, because it was so clear that here was somebody that had seen this over twice the number of decades I have. And so you sit down and you shut up. So how do I move Charlie Luce farther? How do I target Charlie Luce? All I do is encourage him. Tell him thank you. Encourage him to keep on sharing with other people like me. See? Does that move him along? Absolutely. That's the way the body works. And so it's not like targeting means distancing anybody, because you have to target yourself. You know, if you do this right, you target yourself. What's holding me up in my walk with God? You know what, you know, Glenn, what do I have to do to get you to move forward today? When are you going to get across this obstacle? So it's not a negative thing. It's a love thing that always seeks the best of somebody else. So I wanted to defuse that ever so slightly, that, you know, we don't walk around with crosshairs. You know, we don't have posters up on our little cubbies holes of the five individuals, you know, with that little, you know, the firing range where you got the little book. It's not that bad, okay? We just got some people that we want to move further in, you know, in their relationship by loving them further like we would whoever sat there, as we would our friends, our families, and our closest associates. So I wanted to comment upon that. And now what I want to do is for us to look at our homework. So pick out your homework. I'm going to get you to share some of the homework that's the least amount of embarrassing. So I won't talk about your most gross faults. We won't mention those. I won't get you to mention what's the worst thing you've ever done. No, not that one, the really bad one. We won't have sessions like that. But under assignment one, under golden method, and we had homework assignments, and the first one had to do, describe briefly a couple of your experiences at sharing your faith. Now, what I want to do here, and understand that you probably haven't done the homework yet, so I understand that. What we're going to do here is try to identify opportunities. So I want you to, you know, take a second and share an opportunity that came up to share, whether you shared or not. We're not going to discuss. Just how you recognized or how you sensed a situation at the water cooler, at the car, where something was said other than, you know, a profanity about God, and you felt like you should respond, apart from those, but where you think that there was something open there that you could have or did pounce upon, so to speak. Okay? So, and all I'm trying to do is sensitize us to the opportunities, what they sort of look like. We will talk in here about making opportunities. So we're not going to be at the whim of, you know, fate here. But we'll also talk about creating opportunities. But one of the issues is just, you know, when, what do they look like? When have you had an experience where, you know, you had a burden to share, and it was triggered by a comment or something of this type, whether you shared or not? It's, like I say, whether we shared or not, it's not part of the response here. So any volunteers for just a situation like that? Okay.
How was it? My first thing is,
right.
I became a Christian.
Right.
And then people would look at me, oh, well, but how was the sabbatical?
That's right, exactly. Right. How was the sabbatical, right?
You know, so I was trying to explain that to them. And, you know, some people said, looked at me and was like,
right.
You know, what happened? You know,
right.
I just feel so almost like you fell off a turnip truck.
Right.
Know? Well, let me explain what happened.
Right.
The way I brought it out.
Good point. Good.
And a lot of people would meet, so it was a perfect segue. After a while, people would stop asking.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, right. Instead, you pass out a written, here's what happened to me on my sabbatical, my summer vacation. Right, exactly. Here's the 35 millimeter. Click, click. Now, see, that's a good, because there were different levels of people asking how it was. There were some that would be disturbed by your comment, and others that would just blow it off. You know, they blow it off or just write it off. But the thing is, the fact that everybody asked enthusiastically about it, you know, because it is a special occasion, that's an opportunity. And in that particular case, what you had was an overflow of enthusiasm. And one of the things we'll see here is that, you know, there are times where it's just been too good. And so that anybody walks within firing distance is going to hear about this. You know, that's where an overflow of our spiritual experiences is going out to share. A common thing like here would be an elevated scenario where you've had a good morning, you know, with the Lord and got some insight, or you're especially close, and somebody says, "Why are you in such a good mood?" Right? That kind of experience. And you say, I will tell you if you really want to know, but it will embarrass you. You will be nervous at the end of the first sentence. If you still won't ask to know, ask me again. And there you have your perfect out. When they ask you, you say, "It's because I have a personal relationship with the living God in the person of Jesus of Christ." Right? And so, boom. Sure. And then you get to, at that point, say, "Didn't I tell you it was going to make you feel nervous? Didn't I tell you? But you asked. This is the truth. This is all I can say." See, and that's a little moment. That's a little moment of sharing. And because you use the humor with it, you can defuse it, but you still got the message out there. Now, that's one where it overflows. There are other situations where there's this huge sucking sound in somebody's life, where there's that need, there's so much pain and so much hurt, where there's a prompt to reach out. See, and that's a little different because a lot of times, you know, I don't know about your experience, but in mine, the time I run into these people are when I'm hurting bad. And so God's trying to distract me to recognize that this is what Jesus lived. You know, he was always living because he knew the cross. He knew where he was headed. And he felt much more than we would ever dream of being able to feel as a perfect human and a perfect God. He had ultimate sensitivities to every human emotion and divine emotion. So it wasn't like he was living in denial of this. But he still stopped, remember, on the cross as he ministered to the thief next to him. He stopped while he was dying and took care of somebody else's needs, right? So there'll be also those kind of opportunities that show up. Anybody else?
One of them, me too, but it was sabbatical. I did 7 years in 7 weeks in Asia. And my coworkers knew it was going to be a return to Vietnam plus mission support trip.
Gotcha.
You know, I'm a believer. Sometimes I don't do honor to my
calling,
but you know, they know I'm a believer. And so when I came back, I had that overflow thing going.
Right.
And I've got the sucking sound in the cubicle next to me. Mike gets off the phone with his wife, and the vulgarity and the anger.
Right.
You know, and I get to say, "Hey, Mike, you know, had enough pain yet?"
Right.
And I can't. Mike and I have got like a 5-year relationship that always started out with the elbow and the ribs.
Right.
Continue. I mean, to suddenly turn very compassionate.
Right.
Wouldn't work. So right. I just say, "Hey, Mike, you got nothing."
Understand. Yet. Exactly. Yeah, that you have to be true to who you are, because that's who's witnessing. Absolutely. Good point. Good example.
Well, kind of just, I think kind of what you said last week, you know, something like that, how you have kept the record of what you prayed for, what you prayed for, blah, blah, blah. And I'll be 40 in about 2 months, and I came here when I was 23, which is kind of a practice, way I did it, very long story. But, and I've always studied people, because there seems to be phonies out here.
Right.
The kind of first guy that made Christ was Simpson. I was led to Christ, but what happened to him and his wife, all of this,
gotcha.
I've been out of the church for a long time.
Wow.
And so I'm always very doubtful of people. You know,
right.
I studied them, and I was so attracted here when I saw, you know, like Ed Woodall and just down the line, the guys who I got to know and so on and so forth. And how you talk about God being, it's so true that how faithful he is and how he's there. How, if you, I mean, I hear I've been a Christian all the time. I have read the Bible all the way through. My brother-in-law just came and went. I've read all the way through, but yet there are some things I finally get a clue on, like, you know, every
I understand, right.
God, I just be there and use me however you can. And it is amazing how God will use you. I look back over 14, 16 years of teaching, coaching, how when I left the school, how I've had so many people come. And I'm sure, like, I don't think I think action speaks much louder than words.
Right.
I'll use words whenever I feel like it's necessary.
Right.
But, you know, I just, you know, you see some of the stuff on TV, you know.
Right. That's bad.
And your face on it. So it's just amazing to me how many outfits God has. But like I share my life too, like most children, we, if God changed God, like me, if this
right.
is the stuff I did, we changed any of it.
Right.
So I'm just, good. Just being loving and doing.
Right. That's good. Absolutely. Absolutely, good point. There's a, I forget who said it, but there's a deeply spiritual man. I don't know whether it's J.I. Packer or not. It's one of those John Stott types or something. It's got says, preach the gospel 100% of the time. Use words if necessary. St. Francis, right.
Can I back up one thing? I'm sure what taking this away from my wife, I was concerned about this, always worried about, you know, my trouble with those films and stuff.
Right.
I both of you guys talk about being excited. When I said about word, you know, I know how excited it is and how you want to hear. I don't mean that when I say actions speak about words, I don't mean that towards you guys at all.
Yes.
I had a buddy, a friend of mine, who I'm still good friends, I hadn't seen him in years, and he was such a turn off people, but not because he was so excited. People can be excited and sincere, but yet
right.
he was such a hypocrite. They saw the hypocrisy day in, day out with his lifestyle.
Yeah.
So he had the words, but there wasn't sincerity behind it. It was words and hypocrisy.
That's going to be one of our biggest problems. I mean, by far and away, on the think tank, I have a survey on the website. I got a survey where it says the two greatest arguments in favor of the traditional Christian claims, and then the two arguments most opposed to the traditional Christian claims. The Christians that come through under the arguments against the faith consistently talk about the lives that we live. In other words, by far and away, the biggest damage that's done against the person of Christ is the way we live in public. And part of it is how we set that up for failure. We somehow don't portray Christians as real people. That's a separate issue. And there's a lot in here that has to do with trying to defuse that so that we can be witnessing all the time instead of those twice a year when we're actually perfect for those 5 minutes. Okay, so we're trying to reclaim lost time as part of this as we go forward. Does it come?
I just ask you one other question. It's kind of off this a little bit, and I'll shut up. I'll listen to my hair, but, the reason I ask you, I love politics too, and just I love talking about Christ beforehand. And the reason I think this class is because Norm told me about you, sir.
Okay.
He said you're the best politics ever been around. Perhaps the best historian. You really enjoy that. And but what you know, I realize religion's a term, you know, and there are some good. I mean, what I tend to do so much because I see so many of the non-Christians that are here, I try to distance myself from the word religion. I mean,
right.
You really,
understand.
I don't consider myself religious. So
right.
I just wonder if like, you know, like you know, and I read all Ray's books. I mean, I think most people know that distinction between religion
right.
and legalism as opposed
right.
to a relationship. Right. You often, if somebody else said to you, "Oh, you're a religious guy," how would you answer that? I mean, to me personally, I'd say, well, it's how you define religion.
Well, that's what you have to do. Sometimes you have to pick that up by the tone of how they use the word. In other words, you can read the nuance. Are you by any chance religious? You know, I mean, there are times where you can pick up, you get a clue as to how they understand religion. But a lot of times you do have to mention that. We'll see a place in here where they say, well, you know, I don't believe in Jesus. And you have to say, which Jesus do you not believe in? Because there's a whole bunch of caricatures out there, and let's make sure you've rejected the right one. I mean, because most of them are worth scrapping, you know. So a lot of times in our culture especially, you do have to go and you can distance it, but we'll use it in context where we try to define it in terms of our life. We'll use euphemisms like spiritual life and religious experience and things of this type, but I will typically move use spiritual instead of religious to avoid some of the institutional problem, you know, the bad history, church history, the debacles of that. So I'll generally try to swing the discussion, if I can, more towards spiritual area, which has a different set of problems, at least in the valley, than religion. Yeah, there are things that go off in different areas, but depending upon who you're talking to, you can defend yourself less over on spiritual than you have to do with the Crusades, and you know they're a separate set of problems here. Okay, but that's a good observation, and that's basically the way you have to deal with it. You have to sense whether you've got to distance it, or you can redefine it. If you can redefine it in the context, you can use it. You know, there's no reason they ought to steal all our good words. You know, and sometimes you can do that literally with a simple remark that says, "Well, the answer to that is yes and no." If you mean by religion the organized institutional thing that just really embarrasses most of us Christians most of the time, I'm not a member of that typically very often. Sometimes, you know, I'm just a normal person, so I am part of it sometimes. But if you mean by that those that just have a personal working relationship with God in history and in their lives, yeah, that in that sense of religion, yeah, I would be called religious. But that's really not the focus of you know what? I mean, the main thing here, friend, is that do I have a relationship with the Lord, and has the Lord working in my life, and is He involved in my life, and am I open to His input, And am I open to his impact that he'd like? So you try to get it always off of those words. And you'll see us, we'll move from words like religious and values and morals as fast as we can over into what happened at the cross and Jesus, you know, because that's going to be the expression of those. And that's part of what we mentioned last time is that, you know, that somebody asked the question about the creation. And I said, we're going to try to get as specific as we can about the cross and the gospel as the power of God. Good point. Okay, now we got one other one before we get into the new material is assignment 4 on the goal and method. The question there was to try to visualize 3 or 4 inappropriate ways of sharing your faith at your office or your work setting. And then there was a reflection back on the people that were most influential in your spiritual journey. What did they do and what did they say? In other words, how did they move you forward? Okay, so first let's get 2 examples of inappropriate ways of doing it at your office. Any suggestions there?
Changing all the screensavers in the lab.
Oh, gosh, that's a great one. Changing all the screensavers in the lab. Damn, biblical. Oh, that's great.
I did it in my office.
Oh, no, he did it in the office. I understand. Yeah, it's restricted viewing. Okay, it had an R rating, right? Of Christians only, right? That's good.
And it's really good more for encouragement.
Understand, absolutely. But that's an example like the Joe and Joan that we use in the opening about people doing the all email and voicemail and all that kinds of stuff. Any other on the inappropriate?
Telling your coworker what's wrong with them or what he or she should do.
Yeah, that's a good one. All right, so the second one was telling a coworker what's wrong with them. So this is where we step out of evangelist and turn into judge, right? And we just go ahead and deliver it early just so they can break them into what they're going to do. That does tend to get us off on the wrong foot. That's a good point. That does. And if we say, well, we're going to segue to the gospel because you got to get them lost before you get them saved. You know, and so it's my job to get them lost, you know, by pointing out their numerous faults and character failures. Right. Good point. Excellent point. All right, now let's shift to the people that were most influential in your spiritual journey. What did they do? What did they say? How did they communicate credibility to you? How did they communicate love and care for you? Just what were they like and how did they move you forward? Be they parents, be they friends, be they family or something of that type. Any examples there?
The most memorable to me was the contradiction between just a firm teaching. Because I heard a firm teaching about 7 months before I gave up. Mm-hmm. And I heard this firm teaching at a funeral service. And I was surrounded by CEOs and CFOs and XIOs, and the Fortune 500 was there because the guy that offed himself was a big monkey mind.
Okay.
And they were all, you know, scratching their heads and winding their watches, and I said,
right.
What happened?
Right.
And this pastor stood up and very lovingly just said, this is what it's all about. So I was intrigued by, here are the Fortune 500 CEOs.
Right. Don't have a clue. Right.
And this guy had a clue.
Right.
And then when I went to pester this guy, he was just... all he did was say, well, you know, if you want to find out more, come on over and hang out with the rest of the guys.
Gotcha.
It was a very inviting, zero threat.
Right.
Less than zero threat. It was like, hey, you want to find out more? Come on over here.
Right.
Not, hey, glad you asked. I got an answer for you. Let's go over
that's right.
And close the deal.
Exactly right.
You know, which would
have, good point.
Which would have, I would have bolted at
yeah.
that.
Right. And see, that's a good example there, because what you've got there is personal conviction. You've got somebody that knows God and has the strength and the personal conviction of this is the way it is. This is, you know, if you want truth, here it is. I'm not going to push it. I don't even have to sell it to you, like the closing, right? But that's where our personal integrity, just a calmness about it, would have spoken volumes. The difference between that and executive committees that would not have been able to decide that. That's a good example. Good example. Okay? Anybody else? Dan?
The guy that first witnessed me 13 years ago, we used to play football. I said, the first company I covered in Brooklyn. So we always lined up opposite each other. And after a season of playing opposite each other, we were kind of friendly with each other. One day he said, sure, took me off to the side. Just had a conversation over a cup of coffee.
Wow.
And what was just a couple of minutes, you know, turned out to be about an hour of talking. Now, I actually rejected the message then.
Right.
I just, you know, told him I just wasn't, this wasn't the time.
Right.
But,
know, absolutely.
So that was the first time that, you know, think
right.
about it. We sowed the seed.
That's right.
And, you know, and you know, the ground really wasn't fertile at that point, right. but it was there. And then the Lord brought all these other people in my life.
Right.
You know, I had opportunity to see different things. Yeah, you're right. The worst thing is a Christian sometimes.
Right.
Sometimes the best thing is the Christian.
That's right.
And it was just watching it. And when I finally noticed the contrast, that was the thing. The Christian that makes the life, there's a winsome aspect to it.
Right.
And that you can't deny that. You know, there's something you have to give.
Right.
Not like this. And it just sort of blocked me out.
Right.
And
good point.
I found Rich, the guy that pursued me, well, over the internet.
Well.
I lost touch with him. And I told him what
it was. Neat.
So I went down and visited him back in February. No, he's in Arizona.
Gosh. Awesome.
So see, I wanted to let him know that it matters.
It matters.
He didn't think it did anything.
Right.
It just sometimes it takes a while for the journey.
Absolutely. Well, you know, that's the interesting thing is that, you know, that's experience that I, you know, from people I talk with, they have a lot of this where somebody did that initial, you know, Paul said, you know, somebody planted, somebody watered, God gave the growth, and it's that kind of model where, you know, my own experience was like at a junior high school counselor, you know, and he had something different. It was a winsomeness. His was a joy. He had a joy bubbling over. Other people I've run into have peace. Other have love. Other have massive humility. You know, it's a fruit of the Spirit thing. And again, same like, yeah, I wasn't ready. You know, I remember, you know, when going to one of the prayer things where you're sort of forced to do the group prayer and the youth group, you know, kind of thing, and did the old, you know, I'm not ready to accept you as Savior, but only as friend now kind of prayer, just to get off the hook and, you know, without being a complete bozo there. And he took me out, and he said, you know, you gotta move past that, you know, you gotta move past just the friend thing. But the love was just so, you know, and the gentleness and the winsomeness, you know, good word, was just steady there. And then it took another 6 years before I was ready to bite. So, you know, and that's the thing about this love, and you know, you never know. And I use the model sometimes of hard-nosed skeptics or hard-nosed unbelievers as having been covered with a fiberglass front, you know, head, forehead, fiberglass that nothing gets through, not porous. And that if you can somehow crack it just for a second, split it for just a second, and sow some seeds of love and the gospel in there before it closes back up, then that stuff will cook in the background. It'll just cook. It'll cook. And it'll grow, and sometimes it breaks through like those little plants do our asphalt, just breaks through the concrete. And so it's a matter of trying to pick a shot where you can get just 30 seconds of love and care in, you know, or a word and season to him who is weary kind of model. And then, man, you never know when this stuff comes back at you. Never know when it comes back at you. Yeah. Right. 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 Right.
She's a pretty young gal, too. She had a stroke or something. She ended up in the hospital, so I went to see. I just prayed for her, Mary God, you know, you want me to say something?
Right.
And I could tell she was pretty scared. And I just asked her, hey, can I pray for you? She said, yeah.
Right.
Right. And then I stayed just out of the breeze with her. And then 2 months later, I'm teaching summer school, and the superintendent came and her assistant said, hey, I want to thank you for what you did. It's kind of shocked me.
Right.
You know, I don't brag up, hey, I'm a Christian, but I won't turn my back either. So I ask something.
Right. Absolutely. One of the most powerful things, at least in our Western culture, in our office settings, is exactly a thing that you mentioned there, where you get to say something about the Lord or your life or praying for somebody, and then you change the subject back to normal things, and they're off the hook. And so they know that you're not selling them. You haven't launched into the program, right? But it's part of your life. It's somehow just part of it. It came up at this conversation. Boom, it's here. And now we're back to our regular relationship and things of this type. It'll come back up next time something like this occurs. It has such a power because it's woven into your life. See, that's the thing. We're trying to live this thing. So that's a good example, too. Now, all of them, by the way, and there's a good example I think you mentioned, all of them aren't this sweet. There are those that hit us, and God confuses us about their character. and all we hear is the gospel from them. And he deliberately confuses us about their character, so when they go AWOL and lose it in 10 years, our faith wasn't all dependent upon this individual. I mean, we have teachers like that in our lives. We have friends in our lives that have been influences, positive influences for the Lord, that go away. That they walk away. It hurts like a son of a gun. It hurts. But there's a reality there that our faith is built on Christ and our relationship there, fundamentally. And so not all of them are positive, but there are always situations where God will accentuate something positive in either the truthfulness of what they say. The best case, of course, is where they see the Lord through those words. I mean, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to say, okay, you see me now, but I'm going to introduce you to Jesus right here, and then I'm going to back up. You all have a conversation, and when you get through, I'll come back. You know, that's logically what you're trying to do while you're standing there talking to them. That's the goal. You know, you're just trying to open your heart and share, and you're counting on the Lord to be actually... The night before he died, Philip comes to him and says, "Show us the Father, and it'll be sufficient for us." So Jesus says, "Have I been with you so long, Philip, and you do not know me? Not has he been with you so long, and have I been with you so long, and you have not known me? He who has seen me has seen the Father." And so you don't, you know, it's just merged in there to where your love is God's love being shown. So, we do have to recognize that there are bad examples, and like I say, one of the things that we've got to overcome when we get to problems, are the bad examples, not just us, which occurs, but sometimes ours are a different magnitude than those people on the TV, and those that are in the magazine, and those that are in the church history books, some Torquemadas of the world, and these types that really make it difficult in some cases, and we have to deal with that as an objection and say, well, you know, I'm not trying to get you to put your confidence in the church. The church certainly wasn't up on the cross, you know, dying for you. You know, and we're just looking at, if you want to know who to trust, you look up at the cross. Whoever's up there, that's the person that we want to talk about. Everything else, you know, everybody else is still on the ground. So, now we're going to move to our living, which I think is on page 6. And here we're going to talk about lifestyle issues. And again, these are basics. This is, like I say, not a course in Christian ethics, because that's how to live, you know, how to do good project work from a Christian perspective, or how a Christian debugs JavaScript. You know, this is not a course in that. Not that we could particularly deal with that, and I'm not sure how many mature Christians, of course, would be able to face the demonic that's involved in JavaScript. You know, those kinds of their fear, where angels fear to tread. Yes.
But I think there's one good point here, which I keep thinking about, which is that a Christian should be effective at what they're doing. Right.
We'll talk about it. Absolutely.
One of the things that I liked about my Christian teacher was he was a really, really good teacher.
Right.
And so we don't want to be inept in our work.
No.
But we have this problem where in our valley, no engineering project's ever done on time.
Right, exactly. Right.
So...
Yeah, we'll get to some of that. Absolutely, good point. Okay, first point under living the life is work for the success of others. All right, so now this is a principle that, of course, is now a management principle called servant leadership. You hear about this in the MBA programs, stuff like this. This, of course, is what Jesus did, worked for the success of others. He came to the earth to seek and to save the lost, to give his life a ransom for many. And this is a matter of having the life that people see that is interested in the welfare of others. So look at a couple of the quotes there, putting words in your mouth there. Hey, how's the big project coming, YY? Is there anything I could contribute to helping it be successful for you? Hey, how's the big project coming? They give a response. What's the biggest issue you face right now on it? Let them talk. Is there any way I could be of assistance with that friend? Those two have to do with, you don't even have them to, they don't even have to come up with something for you to do, and your message has gotten across. So you've already said, I'm interested in your welfare, how well you're doing on this. And you're communicating an offer there to help, even if they decline it. It is still an openness and an offer there. an expression of interest in the success of others. If you have resources and they say, yeah, actually there's something you could do, you could come and scrub this down. I'd love to make a practice run of this presentation to you. Or if you wouldn't mind looking over this little project plan, I mean, you've had some experience with this, you know, just, you know, take 10, 15 minutes. You don't get over invested in this, you know, you don't say, I'm going to dedicate my team of 16 people to this project. But is there any way I could give you a half an hour and we could do brainstorming, or you need a sounding board or scrub down or something like that? I'd love to contribute to your success, be part of that and help you. And again, you have to make sure you're not trying to take credit for part of that. So if they suspect that of you, don't even go there. But because the very wary and the very cynical will suspect that you're going to want your name on the plaque with them when they make this return on investment of 32%, right? And so... But just as an expression, is there anything small that I could do, you know, that would contribute? That way they know you're not trying to take ownership of it. But it's a way of working for the success of others. This next one is an interesting one. Bob, I just ran across this magazine article in your field, and I thought about you. I don't know if it would be of any value to it, but I clipped it for you just in case. I hope it's of some value. And you could do that as well as inner office mail or something of this type. And it just shows that you think about them as opposed to only when you're in a meeting with them trying to get something out of them. See, there's nothing literally you take away from them by contributing to them. As long as you don't preface this with says, well, I know you don't read your own trade press, and therefore I'm trying to make up for your deficiency by saying, you know, make sure you communicate this clearly, that you were just thinking about them, and you probably know this already is a good phrase to use in some of these. You're probably already familiar with this, but I thought about you, and just for what it's worth, and if there's some help, okay? And that's working for the success of others, expressing interest in that. I'm going to take a comment here, a suggestion from our friend there that's getting the water. There's food back there, by the way, so feel free to go get the Chinese pizza. That's the snacks. Otherwise, you'll eat it in the car on the way home. It'll be cold. So it's probably now already cold. So just feel free to get up and move back there and get the pizza and the water and stuff. Now, this next one is a little trickier to do. But it's when you have a new hire from outside the Bay Area, in our particular case, come into town. So try to find out their family structure. Do they have kids? Do they have extended family? Where they live, what zip code, if you can find this kind of stuff out without violating HR issues and confidentiality issues in today's world. Find out what their interests are. Do they like boating? Do they like stamp collecting, tennis, mountaineering? Any special needs? Do they have children with disabilities? Do they have access problems? Do they have, you know, anything that requires special access facilities, for example? And then create an information packet for them with suggested sites to see with maps, and resources available. So you can literally say, if you know somebody's in a zip code, go through the yellow pages in the web, find out daycare centers. If they both work, they got 3 and 4 year olds, find 3 of them and put multiple choices out there. Just in a little packet, information packet. Show them where the nearest parks are, just for their kids. Where a couple of the hot spots for, you know, inside entertainment, a couple of good restaurants and different venues for them. Doesn't take a tremendous amount of resource to do this. And, of course, in that packet, be sure to include a map to PBC, to our church, with hours and classes matched to the kid's age. And so you just give them an information packet, and it's a tremendous gesture. I mean, there are professional welcome wagon services out here, but they don't normally customize them at this level. And it's a way of starting out a relationship that starts with a servant heart. Starts that way where you're trying to help somebody. See? And that's working for success in the family and those kind of settings. Okay? Again, we're only talking several pages here. Stuff off the web, a couple of sites, a little handwritten note that said, welcome to the area. I know when we moved or when Joe and Joan moved, this was something that we wished we had had, and I made a vow back then before the Lord that I would help, you know, wouldn't necessarily use the vow word, but I made a vow that I would, you know, anybody that came across my path, I would try to save them a few steps. There are better selections and more selections and wider selections than just this stuff, but just to starting, you know, you might take a look at these. You don't recommend them, you say take a look at them. You don't want legal liability issues if they try the daycare center, you know, and then, you know, something goes wrong. Or they go to the park and they run over by a bus and it was your recommendation, you know, whatever. And besides, you don't know them that well enough anyway, and so you try to at least give them some options and perhaps point them in another direction. So working for the success of others is nothing more than servant commitments to somebody else, trying to help them. The second one is genuine praise for their work and choice. So I need somebody to read a Bible verse for us. So I need a volunteer to read 1 Corinthians 4, 5. Anybody with a Bible here? There we go. Chapter 4, verse 5.
Therefore judge nothing before the appointed time. Wait till the Lord comes. He'll bring to light what is hidden in darkness and will expose the motives of men's hearts. At that time, each will receive his praise.
So at that time, at the final judgment, every person will receive praise from God. Even the worst of us. He's going to find something good to comment about, because he's very honest. We'll let that stay where that is. I won't go down that path. Okay. The point here is that they're generally things that are positive in your co-workers, especially if they've been able to keep the job for any length of time, that can be pointed out and legitimately praised after the model that God has. Okay. And a couple of examples of this. And some of these you can see that they can segue into a couple of different things. The first one is, Joan, I believe that quality should be recognized, and I think you did a quality piece of work on that project, on that report, or on that meeting. That was a good job on that. See, that's a closed statement. That's all you got to say. But you have literally stroked somebody for something that was true. As long as you're truth, as long as you didn't mess this up royally, and you're being honest about this, that's a good low-key way of doing praise. Joan, I really respect the way you stood up for Bob in the meeting the other day. I think that was the right thing to do. I think your fairness to him was admirable. So the typical committee meeting here is where Bob's being raked over the coals by the other people, and Joan stands up and says, well, no, it's not quite that, Bob. Bob did a good job here, and so, I mean, there were some other issues there, but Bob still deserves some appreciation for this, that, and the other, whatever they did. So where somebody stands up for somebody, a legitimate thing, Joan should be praised for that. Because it's too easy to jump on the bandwagon and bludgeon the person to death in the meeting. So that's praising them for their stance there about fairness. By the way, you'll be able to come back to that perhaps as a value later of fairness. The next one, Joan, I know I'm an outside of this deal you're doing over here in your department, but I just wanted to comment on the sensitivity you showed the other day to Martha on her family situation. It showed great sensitivity on your part and good values too. I just wanted you to know this. That's a scenario where, for example, Martha had to leave or leave out of the meeting because of some family issues or something of this type. And Joan showed sensitivity instead of beating Martha up that she didn't make quota that day or something of that type. So anytime somebody shows a positive value, a positive virtue, okay, that's a time to go sit there. We need this anyway, by the way. And this is not just an evangelism thing we're talking about here. This is where you should be doing this anyway, regardless of whether they're not on your five list or whatever. You know, this is an issue that we should be literally recognizing quality. And as Paul says, think on the noble things. Think on the good things. Think on the things that are excellent. And you try to encourage one another, basically. And encouraging and affirming values strengthens those values in those people's lives. Okay? So, praise to them. And then praise about them. This next one is an interesting... Somebody used this on me once, and I remember how it stuck in my mind. Joan, you might get a call from Carl. We were in a meeting last Wednesday, and I was bragging on the quality of your work on the Forbin project. So he might be calling you up for some advice on his upcoming Colossus project. Sorry. I was stuck there for different project names. Okay. But he might be calling you up for some advice on that project. Now, that may never happen. They may never get the call, but you have already made the point that you appreciated the work that Joan did on this project and that you don't mind being evangelistic about quality work. See? That's working for the success. How is that successful to Joan? Joan gets a better reputation for legitimate work, and you were just being honest about sharing her success. This is something that generally is not done in the corporate world. This is where a Christian is different. This is different. This is different. Pardon?
Something that happened just in the last 2 weeks. I put up a fellow worker in a different division for an award from our division, which under our old management chain would have gone through like a bullet. My old management chain loved this.
Right.
My new management chain is a bunch of self-protective, worrisome people that don't believe in building up the people around them.
Okay. Don't use any names and phone numbers. We're recording this. I don't want to get you. Okay.
I'm very vague.
What you mean? Okay. Okay.
So I put in the reward, and the first thing came back: do we have to do this?
Right.
Yes, we have to do this. The guy did a great job, saved us a lot of work.
Right.
We want to recognize that, and we want to encourage him to do that again.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Right.
So under the new management, there's also this mechanism. Don't ask me why, it's just there.
Right.
That, and it's computerized, so you can't change it.
Right. Right.
But if you put in an award to that guy, his management's budget gets dinged.
Oh, I see.
Defeats
yeah.
the purpose.
Defeats the purpose, right.
Right. We want to say on our budget,
right.
we appreciate what you do. So in the 9 iterations of the loop that
right.
I had to go through to escalate this, to
right.
senior man, and all I stayed by was, he did the work.
Right, right, right. Simple and message, right.
Then we complicate it, the program gets canceled.
Right.
So all the work that he's done isn't going to show fruit.
Right.
I said, he did the work.
Right.
It would have saved us.
Right.
We can't say he didn't do the work, he did the work.
Right.
The fact that the computer program is going to ding his budget, we do a cross-charge.
Right.
Real easy.
Right.
Do a cross.
Right.
But just having to go back. And,
absolutely.
And I wanted to get angry.
I understand that.
You know, I wanted
right.
to say, you
right.
idiots.
Right.
But just saying, no, he did the work.
Right.
It's the principle.
You right.
stay with the principle, not all the hoo-ha.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so there would have been a crowd of witnesses that saw that award, and there would have been a crowd of inside the management structure saw the hassles to do this. And that will stick. That just basically sticks. Somebody will think about it. Actually, what will actually end up happening is in 3 years, they will use that idea themselves and take credit for that. But we're passing it on. I mean, we're passing it on, so there's something to be said for that. So that's a good example of that. That's where you're reaching out, and you're trying to again, for the success of others, the recognition of others, and feeding back that loop. Absolutely.
So, Kevin, I just want to share two thoughts that might stretch you a little bit. If you go back to one thing where you can do it, you know, recognize them for a change in attitude, or breakthrough.
Yeah, right. It's a good point.
Be able to do that.
Thank you, dear. Done that.
Okay. Next. Gotcha.
Attitude to stay logically consistent, right? Really appreciated that you and made it sound like all the stuff that they went through was not stuff that they dumped on me, but stuff that they got dumped on them.
Right.
You know, really appreciated that you went through the extra mile to get the right thing done. Appreciate that.
Good.
It was. I wanted to make it sound like that was cool.
Yeah, absolutely right.
It was hard.
The one of the situations this came up. For me, that was a different format. Was I was in a meeting with a large computer vendor, and my counterpart, and I normally didn't, as a slow thinker, I normally don't think of the right questions or the things to say in meetings of this type, and or I'm too hesitant to do that. And so there was this, you know, it was a huge deal, and they were trying to decide the differences between two architectures in this particular case, and not long years ago. And I turned over to my buddy and I said, well, isn't the difference this? And this is the way I tell our customers that the difference between the two architectures is. He said, that's a great idea. You need to tell them this. I said, well, you know, and I was too hesitant to say anything. I didn't want to speak up, too afraid of embarrassment or something of this type. And he waited like 3 or 4 minutes and they were still in discussion. And he said, well, let me say something. You know, I don't know about you, but Glenn has been teaching me this for the last 6 months, that the difference between these is this and that. And it blew them all away. It was a big deal. And I was blown away. The fact that he just didn't do that, just didn't take the idea and present the idea, but he made sure that I got credit for that in that thing. See? And boy, did that cement a bond. Guess what? Who would take a bullet for that guy? That wasn't the only time he did it. But he's done it more than that. But it's that kind of thing that always just sticks in there when you go to bat for somebody like that, working for their success. I also made the thing about simple kudos, email letters, or memos to their boss. The copies to them work for this too. You don't have to do it face-to-face. If you can't wordsmith this well live, then emails are sometimes the best way to do this, or memos. Yes?
I'm curious, was that guy
your buddy a believer? Yeah, he was a believer. He was a believer. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, the next one is over on 7, and we get into Dean's issue, the issue of imbalance, moderation, and excellence, okay, between our workloads. The first quote there is, to make it your ambition from Paul, to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and work with your hands just as we told you, so that your daily life may win the respect of outsiders, and so that you will not be dependent upon anybody. The point there is that the daily life has to win the respect of outsiders. Sometimes that means you don't work too hard. Sometimes that means you do. Respect is a relative term, very relative term. I remember a story of a boss that I had, and at the time he told the story, he was a young IBM executive and he reported to John Akers at the time. And he was trying to impress his boss. And so he was working, slaving away long hours at night. Everybody else would have left. And he'd be there still working away late in the dark. And Akers would come by and notice this as he was just cleaning out, leaving the building. And after about 4 weeks of him trying to impress the boss like that, Akers came in to the young man and said, poked his head in the door and said, "Job too big for you, eh, son? Job too big for you, eh, son?" And the point was real clear. The guy didn't work late ever again. He did beer and pizza the rest of his career, trying to balance it out with his team. And the point was is that there's a point beyond which it looks weird and you don't have the respect. Because everybody has a sense that something has to be more or less in balance. There's got to be some levels of balances. And there are peak times where you stay till midnight and there are times that you don't. Okay, and so this issue of balance and moderation, and I put these into a contrast here between moderation, balance, and then excellence. Okay, and moderation, balance, I liken to a beautiful garden that's a mix of blended beauties and qualities. So you've got a good balanced life, and this is just an internal statement where you're reflecting with a friend. Brenda, I've got to keep this specific project in perspective. I've learned more times than once over the years from my ultimate manager, pointing a finger upwards and looking upward quickly, but my ultimate manager, that success is often a function of balance between competing demands on my resources. I've got to keep that in mind as we move this project along. So how do you think we could approach this particular design challenge or this manufacturing or this materials problem, Barbara or Brenda? See, what I've done is I've made a point there that one of the lessons I've had to learn is that in some cases success is a matter of keeping balance in life. And so how can we work the situation where we aren't here till midnight? Got any good ideas, Brenda? But I've communicated balance. The opposite of that is excellence. And excellence is the brightest rose in the garden. An event of exceptional quality and beauty. And here's where you're saying, I really have an opportunity and resources and commitment from management to create something of exceptional quality here. Often I have to settle for more regular types of input, but here I might get a chance to do the little drummer boy thing. I have no gifts to bring, I'll play my drum for him. Hey, it's a religious thing to me, okay? With a smile and a shrug. So when somebody looks at you weird, whether it's a little drummer boy thing or something like, hey, it's a religious thing. I got a chance to unleash passion. I got a chance, I got resources, I got commitment to do something that's better than we normally are required to put out here. I got a chance to be in pursuit of exceptional quality. Now, these two values are in conflict sometimes. Okay? But only at very high excellence levels, my experience has been. Olympic world-class performance, but not at best practice levels. So when I look at an Olympic skater, I assume that their life is out of balance, that they are trained to be a mutant for that from the ground up. They will be the brightest rose in the garden, and they have that, and they are that. And I don't expect them to have healthy personal lives or any of these other things that require attention, as opposed to Joe or Joan average. Joe or Joan average, right? They'll have the healthiest, most balanced life, but this one will win the gold medal. See? Not a lot of us are called to that level of excellence. We fall into that next category called best practices. This is where you take out of 150 companies that do help desk this way, you go through and say, which one has the least number of problems? And that's the definition of a best practice. Is it hard to be best practice? Absolutely. You have to work at it. You have to be self-critical all the time. So it's not like it's a compromise between, excellence is not has two speeds, high and off. You know, it's a spectrum thing. And it's still difficult to be best practice or close to best practice. So what we have to do in each situation is ask, how much resource have I got? Remember, the difference between the rows here was that I got unlimited resources. Management's given me twice the budget to cut this code or build this model or launch this program than normal. So I've got an exceptional opportunity here to do something of particularly high quality, and I'm going to settle for imbalance for 6 weeks or whatever the project duration is, something of that type. But there are times where you have to fall back to the garden thing and say, well, you know, I could really go overboard on this, Brenda. I could really go overboard on this. What I've got to understand exactly is what the quality spec is on this. You know, what is it they're trying to achieve? And I'd like to better that a little bit, but I don't have to hit zero defect necessarily. If they're accepting a rate here of this type or these many bugs per lines of code or something of this type, that's how we'll look at it. See? And like I say, you will have fake conflicts like this on a regular basis, but it won't show up except at these periods of world class or, you know, Olympic level kind of conflict. In other words, you'll get to choose in most situations. We said they didn't just give me enough resources for this. I can't spin straw into gold. I got to have higher grade barley or something to make gold, but I can't do straw. And so you'll have to understand what kind of from a Christian standpoint, providence has put you in. God has put you in this situation, and you've got some resources, and you have to make a determination whether I should go ask for more resources to do a world class, or whether I take the resources that are given and do a best practice kind of thing. But you will have sometimes these conflicts, and like I say, respect of outsiders is what the goal here is. Okay? You have the drummer boy thing where you're trying to do it for the Lord. You always have to do this as unto the Lord anyway. But you always have to ask, how is this going to look as well in terms of respect on the part of the outsiders? Very common issue, though. Okay, the next issue, D, is a controversial one called the issue of Christian trinkets. Okay, you need to think through. These are the things you have on the desk, your screensavers, less bumper stickers. Bumper stickers, sometimes you can get pretty abrasive, you know, depending upon your mix. But what you've got there that people see every day, what kind of clothes you wear, or buttons you might wear and things of this type, you have to think through the message of each. And some of the problems with that I list here. And we're talking like the wooden little plaques and the, you know, stickers and things you print off on the internet and you post up on the cubby and things of this type at your workstation. Sometimes they will stereotype you into the wrong or weird group. One of my favorite stickers, bumper stickers, but I couldn't use it, would be the little one. It's an anti-evolution one where you've got the little ichthus of Christ chomping on the little Darwin fish thing. You know, it's just eating this thing. About a super violent kind of metaphor for the love of Jesus. Like I said, I'm not trying to pick on that one, but this is one that wouldn't be suitable in all settings. Let's put it this way, okay? If you worked in a marine lab, for example, you know, that this might not be the best sticker to put up on your screensaver. Because it may be true and it may be beautiful or whatever, but you get stereotyped in with a different kind of group, the flat earth group in this process, okay? And so you got to ask, you know, where have they seen this sticker before and what kind of person? Because I'm going to get all of a sudden glupped in guilt by association with that. So you got to be thinking a little bit about that. Just be a little sensitive about it. It may look pushy to some, depending upon how it's worded, what it looks, whether it's pushing. Remember, in an office setting, we're offering as opposed to pushing. And these are individual style and choice issues. When you look at your stuff, you know, do you get a sense that, you know, has anybody even commented about it? They pointed out, and you have to read whether it's okay or not. Almost never leads with love unless you've got a very subtle one. Remember, our issue in evangelism is leading with love. That, you know, we're trying to melt the fiberglass. We're trying to melt a heart to plant the Word of God in for it to sprout. And so we're trying to always lead with love. We do it in our lives by gentleness and kindness and interest in other people and Christ-like characteristics. It's sometimes difficult to do that with a plaque or a bumper sticker or a button. Okay, some of them aren't. I mean, some of them are, that I've seen, some of the subtle Bible verses, "Come unto me, all you that are heavy laden, and I will offer you rest." You know, that's Matthew 11. So that's a good example of one that's gentle. You know, it leads with a love. If you got a good little picture there or an image of Jesus or something. So But the criteria here is, I'm not going to put a list of all the part numbers of all the bumper stickers out there, is you have to look at it and see, how's it going to come across. Be thinking about your office, and will it lead with love? Will it lead with love? Often too close to buzzwords. We've got a whole section here on Christian buzzwords, you know, that we've got to work over to where we translate those in some cases to 20th century stuff. And sometimes the plaques, if the plaques have a lot of religious buzzwords and lingo that's unique to the church, you know, it's not going to have any impact other than to distance you. So you got to watch for how the terminology. I remember the first bumper sticker I saw as a new Christian that was particularly clever was the wise still seek him. See? Now that was provocative. Didn't scare me, and didn't sound way too religious. I had to be from Western culture to know what that meant. Okay, so you wouldn't get full impact out here necessarily. But anybody that grew up like in some kind of Christian church or something like this is going to know about the wise men seeking. Anybody that's been around Christmas enough will make that leap. And that's the kind of thing I'm trying to do. Subtle, leading with love, avoiding a whole lot of religious buzzwords. And sometime before it's opportunity to focus on the real issues later. Now, this is a careful discussion here. Ed, are you a religious person? Are you a religious person, Ed, or something? You've mentioned God a couple of times recently, but I had no idea you were religious. That's the word they always use for this stuff, is, you know, the euphemism. They don't ever say, Ed, do you have a dynamic relationship with a living God? You know, you just don't normally get this a lot unless they're picking a fight with you. We'll talk about those kind of skeptics later. Now that you ask, Ed, I am a Christian. I asked Jesus to take an active role in my life and future about 7 years ago during a difficult time in our family. Best thing I ever did, Ed. I wish I had done it sooner. Someday over lunch, maybe, I can give you the pocket-sized version of what happened. But I don't do the Christian trinket thing here on my desk, even though there's nothing wrong with it. I basically because I believe that caring for others, you know, when they need help, is a better message than Jesus Saves stickers or something, if you know what I mean. I'm not against those that sweet folk that, you know, put them on their desk, of course. I've got some of them at home myself. It's just that I'd rather people know that, you know, I follow Jesus by how I try to live as He did. For what that's worth, friend. And then you move on. Right, and so you got a couple of things packed in there about the someday later. Maybe I'll take you the pocket size version, which lets them off the hook. Think I'm about to get the Bible length version of it now, because you mentioned the God word, you know. But at the same time, tries to differentiate without putting these people down too much. Sweet people, I've got some at home. You know, says yeah, there's nothing wrong with them per se. It's just that I've got a stance that says it should be more obvious from the way, you know, that we live. Now, you may have to immediately go into the, I don't do this very often. I know I don't. I'm not a very good Jesus plaque. You know, my life, especially that blow-up I did in the meeting last Tuesday where I got mad at just, you know, ripped Joan's face off about that little underattainment of the project. So I'm not real good. I'm a very good sticker or a little plaque at this point. But he's still working on me. Believe me, I got a long way to go. That's bad. If that meeting had occurred 5 years ago, it would have been much more bloody. Trust me, he's working on me, but still got to go a little further. Now, this last point, we're not going to have time to go through heavy because I want to go on 9 because it's a special one, and I'll ask you to read it at home. And this has to do with dealing with demands for questionable ethical practices. So this is where the boss asks you to forge documents or lie about things that once you do, if you're aware that it's shady, your Christian testimony will tend to be compromised thereby. There are issues of plausible deniability and things of this type. But what I've got here are basically one type of ways, a couple of threads that you could follow to try to get out of that without alienating your boss and showing up on the dismissal list for next quarter for unknown reasons. Okay, so that you still have a Christian witness to the boss, as well as the people that will find out about this unethical thing a little later. So just take that at home, read through that, and follow along with that. You may get into that. I've never had to. I've only had to use a mild form of this once. But it's something you have to watch out for. I made the opposite mistake one time, where assuming that that my boss was making a breach of ethics, and it wasn't. But I took a self-righteous standpoint, said I can't work on this project because it's against my God's will, you know. And I was wrong and stubborn and hard-headed about it and wrong, just dead wrong. But took a self-righteous stance about it that made, was clearly I had judged the boss without even asking for an explanation, giving them any benefit of the doubt. I just assumed during the night shift that this was a breach of ethics, a horrible atrocity toward God. And so it was only 15 years later I learned not to slander. But this, of course, precipitated an unemployment crisis in the firm at this particular time, and I went into consulting after this situation where I accused the boss of of breach of ethics. So just go through that. I want to deal with these other last couple in our last remaining minutes and go over our assignments. One of the ones that you may have occasionally, and I actually get questions about this, actually on the think tank, about dealing with dirty jokes at the office. And dirty jokes is a spectrum, and it's hard to define. It's like the fallacy of the beard. We don't know, except in Dean's case, or your case actually, that something is completely a beard. We don't know when it transitions from stubble to beard. But we can always know that, well, that's a beard. That's a beard. And that's clearly stubble. But where that line is, man, is tricky as to where it's inappropriate and where it's not. Not in the case of beards, but stubble just as appropriate. I don't want to make an ethical judgment about facial hair here, okay? Nor to assume that you're more righteous by only having a mustache. I don't want to set up any false standards here, okay? But so you'll have to decide on this on these questionable jokes, dirty jokes. And I've just got two particular tactics that you might can use to try to defuse the issue here. Sometimes you'll get into these, by the way, simply to embarrass you to see how a Christian reacts to this, where you get set up to see how you're going to deal with this. And this could be in very comical settings. First time it occurred to me was in my first year in Bible college in 1974. I was a statistical programmer doing SPSS, biomedical research, in the University of Miami Medical School Division of Addiction Sciences, and with a particularly pagan group of researchers in the psychiatry department. They set me up in my they knew I was from the Bible House, even though I had all degrees and background, stuff like this. And so they picked as the independent variables in their runs, you do like ACE by RAGE, by socioeconomic indicators, you know, you run these cross tabulations, tables, this variable by this variable, and you look for your coefficients. And what they had used for the variables, instead of the normal variables, they had used all the four-letter words that they knew. And I was the one that had to read the results out in staff meeting. So they brought in this this big document, this big, you know, the green bar printout, dropped it out there and said, okay, well, take us through, what's the first crosstab? And I opened it up, and here's this, and this, by these two things, and the laughter in the room just, you know, because I blushed, didn't know how to deal with this as a brand new Christian. I've been a Christian like 2 years, and had no clue how to deal with this. And I was just clearly being set up to see how I was going to respond. That has happened more than once, you know, and having to do with dirty jokes or things of this type or situations at the office where they'll ask you, what do you think about such and such a preacher doing such and such a thing? They'll set you up to see how you're going to respond. And I've got two of the ones that I use. I mostly use the defuse one because you don't know when the joke starts whether it's going to be dangerous or not sometimes. But sometimes you can tell by the tone on the preclude. And preclude said, whoa, before you start that joke, is this going to be one of those things that gets us dinged for in our personnel files or even busted by HR? I don't want to be around if something could be subpoenaed, you know, in a court thing. If so, let me know. I'll gladly step outside until you finish this. This issue has gotten too risky in our industry for my comfort level friend. Or it's just too hot of an issue here in the valley, or too hot an issue here at corporate, and blah, 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 blah. I'm going to step outside. Call me when you all are through laughing so I can come back in and join the rest of the party. All right, that's getting to be an easier way to get out in today's environment. It has some separate problems with it, but generally that's a way of making a statement early. But like I say, a lot of times you don't know where it's going. And defuse is, after the joke is done, simply give a little sneer. That's what I always give, a little sneer and a shake of the head like you would give for a bad pun. And then change the subject. Hey, by the way, did anybody know how the game turned out? I had to leave at 12:11, and the guy was about to jump up on top of whatever they do at ball games and do this thing. Did anybody know how that? So you change the subject after you do the little sneer. So you haven't done an ultimate put-down to the joke teller, But hopefully you've steered it off and stopped the chain that often occurs. There's always top that joke chains that occur in these contexts. And sometimes you can get to derail it if you do it right with something like this. Freedom, point G. One of the grace gifts of the Christian faith is the freedom in Christ from religious rules. If you've got a background in a more rigid religious upbringing, the freedom from duty and from law and from guilt over having fun can be a wonderful revelation in itself to these people. So if you were raised, I was raised in a particular religious group where it was a sin to have fun. And there are people in your subcultures that will have that thing. And so sometimes you say, I'm finally free to laugh. You know, I've been raised XYZ for 25 years, and I thought that it was wrong, that God didn't like it when I laughed. When I finally met Him for the first time, guess what? He giggled. Encourages me to giggle. Encourages me to laugh and have a good time. And then you have to tone it back down to where it doesn't look like you're just justifying a bacchanalian orgy or something of this type by this, but that it's just a matter of, I'm free now. I'm free from that delusion, and I understand God's heart better. And it's really neat. I like that freedom. I like it. And then you move on. Move the conversation on unless there's something there for you to pick up on. Being considerate of feelings, we talked about this last time. Sometimes you make it explicit. Sometimes feelings are done this way. You know, I really don't want to make you feel uncomfortable with this remark, friend. Believe me. But at the risk of doing so, I just want to encourage you to take a fresh, non-churchy look at the message of Jesus. Okay? And that's like my elevator conversation there. Remember where I said, yeah, I'll tell you, but you're going to feel nervous as soon as I tell you what it is. First sentence in. I'll be happy to do it. And then if they bite there, sometimes they won't. Sometimes that scares them off. They don't know where you're going, but they don't want to go there either. But if they do bite, then you say, see, I told you. You know, now I know. And if you tell them, you say, I know this probably made you feel uncomfortable, but you know, I just wanted to be honest with you. It's the most important thing that's ever happened to me, the most important thing in my life, you know, end of statement. And it makes some people uncomfortable. It certainly did me. First time I heard it, first 15 times I heard it. But I wish I'd taken advantage of it earlier. But maybe we'll talk about that over lunch someday. And so being considerate, and like I say, sometimes you can make that point. I know you get, you know, let me just tell you ahead of time, when we, you know, you're going to be scared of this, and it, you know, some people get upset about this. I don't know. Some of this upsets me, you know, depending upon where we are, but sometimes articulating it. And then you've got that last one, the general ethical and work issues, as unto the Lord there. It's a matter that your work habits do have to reflect well, because you are working as unto the Lord. That doesn't mean that you have to be an obsessive compulsive to do this. If you are an art teacher, obsessive compulsive may shut down the wrong side of the brain to make that work. And so you have to look at this as a standpoint, and I literally look at it from the standpoint of the little drummer boy ethic. I always come back to that. You know, I have no gifts to bring, but I can play my drum for you. I don't do a whole lot, but I've played my drum. I can cut code. You know, I can design marketing slicks. I can give political advice. You know, and that's what I do unto the Lord. And that's, even if nobody sees this, He sees this. And so, this drum roll is for you, Lord. This little compile is for you. Whatever. And so, the thing is that when that is the ethic, then what spills out of work habits and work quality is part of that Christian life that we're trying to get the spillover into what people see. See? And so we do have the general worker. If you're slackered, you know, it's going to reflect bad. It's going to reflect poorly. Let's face it. By the same token, if you overdo it, it's going to reflect poorly. You know, as you have to win the respect of outsiders, and that's your judgment as to sort of sometimes where that spectrum is. Sometimes there, people like me work on binges. I'm a binge type of person. I work on a project hard, day and night, 3-4 days, and then crash for 2-3 days. Biochemical depression, all the feedback, the, you know, the flow that comes from that. And that's just the way I went. I stopped doing the little, you know, day timer to where you divide the day into 15-second increments, you know, and allocate this. I stopped that a long time ago because that doesn't work for me and I can't make that work. But I have to make sure that even when I work in the binge model, it reflects well if those people that are holding me accountable for results. So we always do still have to come back to the general and work ethics as unto the Lord. Now that's all the comments that I've got here under lifestyle, because these are the areas that impact our testimony and how people see us and where they see the life of Jesus in us. There are a whole number of other work issues about how you manage people, but a lot of that has to do with this work for the success of others. So working for the success of others and encouraging people and things of this type is part of that servant mentality. What we get into next week, of course, is proclamation. And if you look at the top of page 10, you'll see we're going to try to turn that experience, our Christian lifestyle, into words. Because eventually we're going to want to get to words, be they low-key words, simple phrases that make them think about God, think about the Lord, think about change, think about renewal, those kinds of things. And we'll talk, there we get into, if you just slip through that, you'll see all different kinds of quotes about different kinds of settings that we'll be in that try to take the experience that we've been talking about and put it out there on the table. Just put it out there, like the remark about, here's where it is. Like that, the gentleman you shared in front of the CEO types, you know, here's where it is. And just here's where it is. Remember, we're trying to proclaim the work of Christ in history and in our lives in this process. And that's what we're putting out there. Now let's look at our assignments. Let's go over our assignments for next week. And I think we've got 5 through 7. I think I assigned mistakenly 5 last week, didn't I? About the personalized cease and desist?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. So I won't ask you to assume that your answers are wrong because of the doctrine of depravity and therefore redo them. We'll assume the positives we won't redo that at all. Assignment 6, living the life for each person on your starter list. And for you that came in this week, the starter list was done up in assignment 3. Okay? 5 people in the office. Describe one thing you could do to show care in their situation. Okay? Remember that work for success of others. Then make a short list of the projects or tasks that they're working on and what you could do to make a small contribution to their success. That's project-based. Finally, try to design a schedule of who to praise in your office, when, for what, and through what media, email, kudo letter, voicemail, for maybe those 5 or broader. You may not know these 5 well enough yet to do that, but there would be people that probably you've encountered over the last couple of weeks, last couple of months, that did some things that are probably praiseworthy, that are worthy of that was a good job. That was a great speech. That was a great comment. That was great insight at the meeting about this. That was a great way you handled this or whatever. And just build a little schedule when I'm going to do these. Just put one in, and then you start praying about that as to when perhaps you could do that. 7, living the life. For each person on the starter list, describe any tarnish on your reputation that they may have seen in the past. For each person, try not to use more than 4 or 5 pages describing the tarnish, okay? Depending upon the length of the relationship. But just try to hold it down. Any tarnish that they may have seen in the past and when this would have occurred. This, by the way, is not something we will share in class, just to let you know, so feel free. Then describe the most positive interaction with them on the other side. What's been the most uplifting, what's been the most real, most personal contact interaction, and when you had that. Finally, rate your overall credibility, your ethical reputation, these are all different categories, your gentle spirit, and your work respect in their eyes on a scale of 1 low to 5 high. So there'd be 4 columns for each one of these 5. One called credibility. If you say this happened in history, or this happened, this is true what the Bible teaches, how much credibility you have in terms of your work, you know, how credible of source are you. Your ethical reputation, which has to do a little bit with the tarnish, you know, how morally would they put you up there with the hypocrites, or say, yeah, they're basically solid Christian, whatever that is. I mean, they live by the way I think Jesus would have them live. Gentle spirit, which is our love thing, how gentle would they consider you? And your work respect, how well do they work respect your work habits? Remember that respect on the part of others. So work respect in their eyes. Gentle spirit, let me make one comment about that. Do not stereotype gentle spirit as being the wimpy, mushy stuff. You can be a hard-driving, taking-names manager and do it in a gentle way. You can take people down, way down, gently and lovingly. Good managers do it all the time. And so it's not, we're just talking about the abrasives of gentleness has to do with a kindness in the tone, not a compromise of truth. When you have to fire an employee, okay, it can be done with gentleness. Matter of fact, today's world, it had better be done with gentleness, okay? But it can be done. Reprimands, rebukes, you know, anything that has to be corrective action can be done with gentleness and kindness without compromising truth. So when you do this, don't stereotype, you know, I'm a really charging, you know, type, you know, Custer's last stand kind of model, okay? Therefore, I can't be gentle. See, don't fall into that. Think in terms, if you have to, the life of Jesus. Was Jesus gentle when he dealt with the rabbis, when he called them a brood of vipers? Absolutely. Was he gentle when he dealt with Mary Magdalene? Absolutely. Is it different the way that came across? Surely. Surely. Were some are more forceful than others? Absolutely. But there's still an edge of gentleness. Had a single rabbi said, good point, what do you think Jesus would have done? Would he have kept the hammer falling? No. He would have done a Nicodemus. He said, why don't we meet for supper at your place? Let's talk about the things of the kingdom. See? So don't do stereotypes here about of what Jesus, the Christian life looks like. When you grade yourself, we will tend to either, depending upon where we are on our arrogance spectrum, self-deprecation and personal exaltation as the two things. It's a pendulum in our lives, generally speaking, right? And so you may be closer to this one or this one at any given moment, but take that into consideration when you rate yourself, okay? Honesty has a way of holding us accountable. Well, let's close in a word of prayer. Father, we thank you for our time tonight to look at these issues and talk about some of the things about being a Christian, being a follower of you in the place where we work, Lord. We're down there, we're in the trenches, and these people are like us in so many ways. And we just want to share with them what you're doing in our life, what you've done in history and the lives of others. And we want to encourage them and nudge them along to take advantage of the same thing somebody nudged us and encouraged us to do. Lord, may this spill over. May we love. May we focus on others. May we have the heart you had when you walked around on the earth, and that powerful love drew people to you from all over, every social strata, every job occupation, everything in Galilee and Palestine when you walked around there. May we live lives like that. Lord, move us in that direction. Help us make incremental improvement this week in that area. We ask this for your Son's sake, and bring us safely back together again. Amen. Okay.